In partnership with NDTA, this podcast focuses on DoD's bulk fuel enterprise and management. It includes insights and commentary from both U.S. Transportation Command and the Defense Logistics Agency. Its moderator, Guy Boer, poses questions concerning changes and the future of DoD's bulk fuel enterprise to two very qualified senior leaders, Lieutenant General Mark Simmerly, Director of the Defense Logistics Agency, and Lieutenant General Jared Helwig, Deputy Commander of U.S. Transcom. Together, they lead the procurement and distribution, maintaining over 51 million barrels of DoD bulk fuel inventory located around the globe.
General Helwig, General Simmerly, thanks for joining me in this podcast to talk about responsibilities and authorities associated with the management of bulk fuel and contested logistics. I've got a few questions that I think we need to hear a little discussion from each of you, and you can really take the conversation in any direction that you want. So my first question is, how has U.S. Transcom and DLA roles, responsibilities, authorities evolved with NDAA language making U.S. Transcom the DoD single manager for bulk fuel and the rewrites of DoD Directive 5108-E and 4140-25? General Helwig, your thoughts.
Thanks, Guy. I think there were probably some early concerns about the roles and responsibilities, Transcom and then DLA. I know that there was a lot of work done and that, you know, there was some conversation about, you know, are we just adding another layer of bureaucracy? You know, there was some conversation at the beginning of, okay, what problem are we trying to solve? But I think as it's evolved, it's really been incredible to watch. You know, we always have been deeply nested between Transcom and DLA. There really can't be any light between us. And when you think about fuel in particular, this is one of those natural areas where this kind of collaboration is really a new way of looking at a commodity, and that gives us a chance to really look at the possibilities of what happens when you unite together and look at the commodity as a opportunity to build and drive the joint force together. The bottom line is, in contested logistics, we are going to have to work and be interoperable in a way that we have rarely been in the past. And when you look at the speed and scope of the challenges ahead of us, building these capabilities together early is just incredibly important for our ability to move at that speed. So core roles, responsibilities, and authorities, you know, we're established single manager. I don't think anybody at this point has gotten any issues with it. And actually, as it's grown and we've seen how powerful it can be, it's really allowed us to bring a global point of view to a new and existing process that I think is really going to be useful for the joint force going forward. Mark, do you have anything?
First of all, Guy, thanks for including me on the podcast, and it's always good to join my partner, Lieutenant General Helwig, on an event like this, especially an area where we've got so much opportunity to improve our support for the joint force. And I think it might be helpful to your listeners. I imagine most people who are tuning into your podcast have an idea about Defense Logistics Agency, but I'll just describe it up front, and then I'll talk specifically to your question. So, you know, our mission in the Defense Logistics Agency is to deliver effective and efficient global logistics support for our warfighters and our nation. We're responsible for end-to-end global defense, from the supply chains, from the raw materials, all the way to the end user disposition. So all of those services, the 11 combatant commands, federal agencies, truly across the globe, you know, our mission spans with 9 different supply chains altogether that we're responsible for. And we know that the way those supply chains have operated in the past, in the global war on terror, for instance, when we didn't have a contested logistics environment like we're experiencing today and we expect to experience in future battlefields, we had efficiencies that we could tolerate. We had practices that we could tolerate. But we understand now that some of those past models, even where we achieve what we considered at a point in time to be best practices, are not going to be suitable for the challenges of the future. And one of the key ways that we overcome that is by stronger integration and alignment with our partners. That's certainly true in this case with bulk fuel and the partnership between DLA and Transcom. And I would say, you know, really strong agreement with General Helwig that this is a good news story, and it's emerging to be a good news story overall for the Department and the Joint Force. And it's founded upon the strong integration alignment that we've achieved to date, but also the trajectory that we're on in terms of improving that overall posture. We've been partners for a long time between DLA and Transcom. We, you know, operate supply chains, and of course, we receive outstanding distribution support across the globe with Transcom. The NDAA 352 gives us a chance to redefine and create new roles and responsibilities and authorities to support DoD's worldwide fuel posture. And so, you know, our historic role as an executive agent for DoD bulk petroleum will be rescinded with the cancellation of the DoD directive 5101.08E that you referred to, Guy. And we expect that to be signed out this year. And so, of course, now our new roles and responsibilities will be codified in a new DoD directive that establishes the policy, assigns responsibilities, and outlines procedures for the Joint Petroleum Enterprise in support of strategic guidance for planning, sizing, acquisition, and sustainment, among other important priorities. And it identifies, as you mentioned, the commander of Transcom as a DoD single manager for global bulk fuel management and delivery. We'll no longer be the executive agent, but we will remain the integrated material manager. So the procurement functions will still reside with us. And that means we have to be better integrated with this function, this capability, the supply chain with Transcom. And what we've seen over the last several years now is a concerted effort on both Transcom and DLA's part to further develop and define this relationship. And we are lockstep. There's no friction, there's no confusion. And, you know, one of the things that we did early on, and my predecessor was responsible for this, putting out a very robust reach back team here in Transcom tied to DLA Energy. And so this liaison cell will be a key component of the petroleum integration cells that are established at each combatant command as well. It will synchronize those bulk fuel requirements, procurement, and the delivery as well. And then DLA is, you know, playing a key role in the Joint Petroleum Enterprise governance structure. We participate in the steering groups and the working groups across all the key functional areas and participate in the two-star level Joint Petroleum Executive Committee, which directs the bulk fuel issues beyond the scope of the petroleum enterprise to the appropriate DoD forums for consideration and decisions. Bottom line is we've made great gains. We still have work to do together to mature roles, responsibilities, and authorities, and to pressure test a maturing relationship, the ability to make decisions. We can do that through exercises, simulations, and campaigning. There's no doubt that the Joint Force readiness is enhanced through these recently defined roles.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. My next question is what is your biggest concern regarding bulk fuel procurement and distribution in a contested logistics environment?
Thanks, Guy. I'll talk distribution and a little bit of procurement, and then I'll hand it over to General Cimarelli to really talk the procurement piece or whatever else he wants to add. I think, you know, when you look at the contested logistics environment, access and capacity are going to be the two key interests of DoD. You know, our challenge is to get storage right, and then equally important is to ensure that there is a distribution network available at time of need to be able to ensure that that fuel gets to the locations that is required when it's required. And so we've really got to look at positioning. Positioning is crucial. We have to view the supply chain through a contested environment. We have to understand what that means in terms of friction, you know, some of the traditional areas where we've just, as General Cimarelli mentioned, gotten used to having access. We need to look at that through the lens of contested logistics. You know, logistics is a warfighting function, just like fires, maneuver, intel, the other warfighting functions. Logistics has got to look at these challenges and, you know, this commodity in particular through that lens. And how do we build that redundant capability? How do we build the storage distribution network required to meet the demands of this emerging future? And then at the functional combatant command level, we've got to look across the geographic combatant commands and ensure that we're also providing seamless support, as we know that what happens in one combatant command will probably bleed over into others. And we've seen multiple examples of that, even with what's been going on in CENTCOM recently, where demand in one COCOM generates requirements that need to be met and shared across the other COCOMs. And so how do we use these authorities now as the single manager for bulk fuel to ensure that both combatant commands, A, understand what's going on, understand the risk and where that risk resides, and then have faith that between TRANSCOM and DLA, we will mitigate that risk in ways that are additive to what traditionally maybe the geographic combatant command might consider. So how do we build faith, trust, and competition that we will be there at time of need, and that that network that we build will be available at time of need? And then, as Mark also alluded to, we've got to rehearse it and pressure test it, and we've got to put it through the realities of this warfighting function in a contested environment and see where it works well and where it can be improved.
Hey, Guy, and I'll add to that. And I think that, Lieutenant General Helwig's answer is a really good indicator for your listeners of the value of having a COCOM with this responsibility. And, the opportunity for a COCOM to lead this challenge across the joint force, to collaborate with the joint staff and other senior leaders within the COCOMs, gives us some reach and access and some understanding that we couldn't achieve previously. So that's part of the opportunity. But, when you think about the contested logistics environment, I agree. I mean, I think the pronounced risks are for procurement and distribution, some unique factors with each one of those. And, with contested logistics, where we're contested in all domains, contested at all levels of war, from the tactical edge all the way back to the homeland, there's no place within the supply chain that we can be complacent. It's at risk everywhere. And it's at risk right now, even though if we're not in conflict. But you definitely say that there's a current cyber domain conflict that's ongoing right now that we have to be very watchful of and respond to constantly so we can maintain the resiliency of the supply chain. There's quite a few real world examples that are emerging, certainly some of the cyber that we could talk about. But I think there's one that, there's a vignette that came up over the past year or so where we got a chance to really put to trial the new roles and responsibilities between us and TRANSCOM, and that's in the Red Sea and the fuel support to the Navy. So I think just by describing that vignette a little bit, I think a listener could understand, what some of the aspects of the contested logistics are that are emerging and some of the opportunities that we have to collaborate for those in response to those. So you recall that in November of 23, the Houthis conduct dozens of attacks on commercial ships, cargoes, fuel tankers that were transiting the Red Sea. And those actions certainly endangered civilian crews and threatened freedom of navigation through a critical global transportation route, where 12% of the global trade passes through the Suez Canal. And there were at least 29 major energy and shipping companies that had to alter the routes to avoid those Houthi attacks. And so in December of 23, when they threatened to attack any ships they believed were heading to Israeli ports, though many other attacks both before and since then have been against civilian ships that had no known Israeli affiliation or port calls. In mid-December of 23, they also threatened to attack ships affiliated with the U.S. and its allies, including members of Operation Prosperity Guardian, which is the multinational initiative to protect international freedom of navigation in the Red Sea. And you can imagine that global bulk petroleum operations were not immune to that Houthi threat, and the ways that we would traditionally resupply were no longer available due to that threat in that area. And so this is really where we had to look at some alternative ways to support. So to continue supporting Navy operations in the Red Sea, two tankers were remissioned from operations in EUCOM to the CENTCOM area of responsibility. And we were able to utilize a newly developed tanker tasking order process that allowed the ongoing mission, even though the fuel that was positioned on land at the defense fuel supply points in the Djibouti and Salalah were marginalized. And that diversion of the mission was successful in part because of the trust between TRANSCOM and DLA, but also the clarified roles and responsibilities when we had to go to COCOMs to explain to them what was necessary as we shifted a capability from one COCOM to another. So that's just one example. And we see more campaigning, as General Helwig mentioned, as opportunities to continue to refine and grow. So there's quite a few exercises in the near term, Indo-PACOM in particular, where we have an opportunity to campaign and exercise these roles and responsibilities in the context of conflict. We can look at the surge requirements that are going to be necessary that will try the strength and stability of our current posture and really give us an idea of the threat and the impacts and the mitigation that's going to be necessary based upon the contested logistics environment.
Thanks, gentlemen. And now, with an eye on the future, what do both of you feel is left to do in this space?
Yeah, I really appreciate that question. We are very much reliant on our commercial partners for access to tankers and tanker capability. So we've got to increase our access to tankers, continue to look at, you know, the tanker security program and how we expand it and where and what types of vessels we bring into U.S. service across the board. One of the things we do in conjunction and tied at the hip with DLA is look at the military construction that each of the COCOMs is doing as they build out the DFSPs. And one advantage we have as a COCOM is to be able to add additional emphasis to projects that have a great amount of utility to the joint force and may not get the visibility that they would if they're racked and stacked against the other requirements of a geographical COCOM. So we are very interested in the MILCON projects and advocating for the ones specifically that help the bulk fuel enterprise build out that network that I described earlier. We're really working on a single source of truth across the DoD for bulk fuel. Prior to this responsibility, I don't know if there was really much emphasis on building a universal or DoD-wide common operating picture, and you know, what were the terms of reference and how do we look at the amount of fuel that's available in any given geographic combatant demand. So I think working through that single source of truth and continuing to expand that, which of course that data is a central cornerstone to another thing that we need to do, and that is use data analytics, AI, and what have you to be able to forecast and better predict what we need to do within the network to be most supportive to the needs of our individual combatant commands. And then very much tied to that same comment is strengthening partnerships with allies and partners, understanding their fuel requirements and concerns, and then other stakeholders in the region that are equally important when it comes to everything from our interagency partners and what their fuel requirements are to how we provide support across the board from the U.S. government perspective. So that is our continuous process improvement that we need to make. And then the last thing I'll talk about is, you know, generally across the services, strategic fuels understanding or capability or, you know, specific training has eroded. Most of the components, their logisticians have become generalists across the board, right? And so this emphasis on global bulk fuel has allowed us to really look at, you know, where do we need to put some additional work into building strategic fuels capability that maybe is kind of eroded over time. And so the work with our field offices, the FISOs that we've put into position across the COCOMs to help illuminate, you know, I was a J4 Indo-PACOM. And we had great Americans there doing fuel, but their depth was not very deep, right? They just had not done a lot of work in the space. So the FISOs and this ability to kind of pull this together, I think, is really helping us get more fidelity and more experience put at the problem set. And so we're excited about that. I think that's going to help the whole enterprise out over time.
I think, you know, my response will be in some ways redundant with what you just described, but certainly for bulk fuel, definitely for all of our supply chains, the contested logistics environment demands supply chains that are smarter, faster, better connected, and better protected in general. And as you think about each of those aspirations, smarter, faster, connected, and protected, central to each of them is data. And so within DLA, critical commodities and services we manage, data is the most decisive. And so optimizing our use of data is really critical to better understand and mitigate the end-to-end risk overall. And when we think about supply chains being effectively resourced, connected to kill chains, integrated with advanced technologies and real-time data, we know that we can gain numerous advantages over our current state. So integration accelerates decision-making and action, supports large-scale operations involving multiple branches, international partners, and improves demand forecasting while providing actionable information to industry. And so, you know, what are some of the specific things that we know data will enable to improve our ability to perform and provide bulk fuel support to the joint force across the globe? Number one, I think it will allow us to continuously recalibrate our bulk fuel storage posture. As the COCOM plans evolve, as we understand requirements differently, we have better access to tools to challenge our current posture and determine what the future posture needs to be. Another area that I would highlight that, you know, data will provide us with better performance on is visibility, as the General Hellwig mentioned. So, you know, automated bulk fuel visibility and reporting, something that, you know, we've been challenged with and having, you know, the real-time data that's necessary for leaders to make decisions. And then calibrating with precision the right magazine depth for all commodities, but particularly fuel in our pre-positioned forward stocks, so that we understand the combat requirements versus the on-hand capabilities and the ability to restore them, replenish them in a fight. And we have a firm understanding of where the vulnerabilities are and the risks that we can and cannot assume in support of those operations. And then I'll just add, and that's not necessarily data related, but a key element is improving access to military grade fuels that are becoming more and more difficult to procure commercially, because they're not produced for the same requirements in the commercial realm. So that's a challenge we have to overcome. And I definitely agree that we do have a professional military education gap that's emerging within the joint force. This, you know, bulk fuel management proficiency, I think I can confidently say that the Navy invests the most in the Navy Supply Corps and that capability. So we've got more senior grade personnel who have that specialized experience and development in addition to education. But this is something I know the joint staff and the J4 have taken on as a specific gap that they're addressing with the services and PME and in talent management, so we can address it. One of the ways that we've done this traditionally is rely upon the institutional subject matter expertise of procurement specialists for fuel in DLA, right, that are forward located.
So gentlemen, thanks a lot. You've been very informative. I normally give folks an opportunity in a podcast to provide any closing thoughts, and they don't necessarily have to be about bulk fuel. The floor is yours for any type of closing thoughts that you might have for our audience.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I think when you think about fuel, it's the most joint commodity we manage and use. And so looking at what we're doing in joint fuel is just a great starting point for exploring other ways to synchronize supply chains and the distribution that are going to be so fundamental to the future fight. In a contested environment, we will all suffer if we don't figure out how to work together and make, you know, unforced errors across the joint force when it comes to working together intentionally and collaboratively ahead of the requirement. There's no place that's more evident than in the Pacific. So we've got to really figure this out and work with it. And using bulk fuel as the cornerstone or the beginning or the foundation of this conversation is very helpful, because everybody needs fuel and energy. So I'm excited about that. I think what General Simmerly said is very poignant and as well, in that we've got to continue, not just with fuel, but across the logistics enterprise, to rehearse and refine, build those competencies and capabilities that maybe in the past have not been viewed as part of the overall preparation or execution of campaigning or warfighting. But we know that in this next fight, in this next environment, the movement and sustainment of the joint force will be contested from the fort and throughout the entire contested space. So we've got to use this to continue to learn, and we have to use every opportunity we have to rehearse those key portions of the supply chain that will be fundamental to our ability to fight in a contested environment, and understand how our warfighting function integrates with the other warfighting functions to generate the results that the DoD and the American people expect of us is fundamental. That involves every service and our, what we call our, you know, our fourth component of industry, linking them all together and building that capability across all of those forces. And so I'm excited about it. It's a great time to be a logistician. I think both General Summerlin and I would say that this is a great time to be able to use and actually operationalize what we have known for many years to be key components to the joint fight. And so writ large, people are convinced that contested logistics and logistics in general is a problem. Now our challenge is to start the process, you know, continue the process, maybe better said, to start fixing the problem.
And I'll just add to that by saying, you know, we have achieved significant gains with the understanding of the risks of the contested logistics environment. We've certainly gained senior leader interest and engagement in ways that I've never seen in my career, especially at the strategic level, as we look at the challenges with sustaining the fight globally. And so that gives us some opportunities. I would say there's still some unrealized gains that we need to achieve with greater investment in capabilities as we think about posture and positioning requirements and capabilities in advance of need that will be difficult to move and to get into place when we're in conflict. One of the ways we do that is by gaining credibility with senior leaders through our campaigning, through our rehearsals, where we can refine requirements in partnership with the operators. And so, you know, we can highlight and help illustrate those gaps more rapidly and more realistically in that exercise campaigning environment. So that's kind of the opportunity we have in the near term to take advantage of those. We also then have to be able to act in concert and communicate risk in similar terms. And as a joint force, come together and coalesce around the idea of what we need to do to invest now in capability that we're going to require in the future. And so, you know, I think, as General Helwig mentioned, you know, the rehearsal aspect is critical, but that should also lead us to innovate. So, you know, there's tremendous room for innovation when it comes to bulk fuel. And, you know, one of the key areas, neither one of us really described it yet, is just moving away from this idea of fuel as a static commodity, looking at it as a mobile commodity as well. Not only when we get it from fuel point to fuel point, but also in terms of having fuel afloat as an example, right, where it can be repositioned rapidly, it can be made available to, you know, multiple sites through pre-positioned mobile fuel afloat. So that's just an example of some innovation that's going to be required for us to be successful in this future fight in the contested logistics environment.
Gentlemen, thanks. This has been a formative podcast. I know trying to get you together is hard. I thank you for taking the time to participate. You made this a must-hear podcast. Thank you again.